The Guardian. Science Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace's award-winning templates are the most beautiful way to present your ideas online. See for yourself. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code GUARDIANSCIENCE to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Few scientists have played such a fundamental role in the history of aging research as Dr. Leonard Hayflick. In the early 1960s, Dr. Hayflick reported for the first time that human cells age when cultured in a laboratory dish. And so this became a fundamentally new way of studying and understanding human aging.
In 1965, Leonard Hayflick published a landmark paper describing a process that limited the proliferation or growth of normal human cells in culture.
And then looking forward to the future of the understanding of human aging.
The effect linked aging with one of the body's defenses against the growth of tumors. But the exact mechanism, named cellular senescence, was unclear.
Father of modern aging research, why do we think that?
Fast forward half a century and cellular senescence is taking center stage as a promising approach for treating age-related diseases. So what have we learned about how cells become senescent? And how might we harness it to treat an ever-aging population?
What senescent cells do is they secrete factors that attract immune cells. So those are inflammatory cytokines and chemokines that they secrete in vast amounts. And for instance, natural killer cells and other types of immune cells that can kill foreign cells, so to say, are attracted to that location where the tumor is positioned.
The point really, I think, for us is, can we treat multimorbidity, frailty, all these increasing disability with aging all together? And that's where I think there is a significant hope for senolytic or senostatic treatments.
I'm Ian Sample. This is Science Weekly.
Hi, Jan. You can hear me okay, can you? It's Ian Sample at The Guardian.
Before we get into the role that cellular senescence plays in aging and its therapeutic promise, a bit of background on exactly what it is.
Let's see here.
Sorry.
Yes, I have those. Let me check.
This is Dr. Jan van Deursen from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
Yes, my name is Jan van Deursen. I'm at the Mayo Clinic. I am the chair of the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. I have a number of other roles as well.
I spoke to Jan via Skype this week and started by asking him for a definition.
Senescence is really viewed originally as an anti-cancer mechanism. So from a perspective of evolution, it's really important that a species can reproduce very efficiently and successfully. And so to be able to do that, it needs to be protected from diseases early in life. And that's what natural selection selects for genes that make species able to do that. And so for mammalian organisms and other organisms as well, it's really important that early in life, there's not a risk of development of fatal neoplastic lesions.
Yeah, I was going to ask you just, you brought in this phrase neoplastic lesions quite early, and I wanted to just ask you to flesh that out a little. I presume what you mean by there are, well, in our simple journalistic speak, might be early signs of cancer, but maybe you might just explain what you mean by neoplastic lesions.
Yeah, neoplastic lesion is basically when a normal cell, a healthy cell, gets damaged. And this can be like DNA damage or oxidative damage, proteotoxic, so damage to protein, lipids, or DNA. And then healthy cells start to function aberrantly. And some of these cells can actually undergo uncontrolled cell proliferation. So at that stage, you call that the development of a pre-neoplastic lesion, so a precancerous lesion, an early form of cancer. And there's a couple of ways in which we have evolved to protect ourselves against such lesions. One is, if a cancerous cell arises in our body, we can just kill it by, for instance, programmed cell death or apoptosis. And another way we can deal with the issue is by preventing that cell from ever dividing again. And that mechanism of preventing cell proliferation is referred to as cellular senescence, and it was originally viewed as an anti-cancer mechanism.
The cells then are not dead, they're more in a state of suspended animation. But how do they get this way?
Senescence has been really extensively studied in cultured cells, so basically in incubators. So you take them out of their natural context, you grow them in a petri dish in a controlled environment. So actually we know very little, and senescence is really a halting of the cell cycle clock. So when a cell divides, it goes through various stages. First of all, it duplicates its DNA content. And then after it's done that, it separates the duplicated chromosomes into daughter cells. And that process is basically when that is very controlled, then you're healthy. If it becomes uncontrolled, you are at risk of developing cancer. Basically, cancer is uncontrolled cell proliferation. Cells keep going through that cell cycle without basically knowing when to stop.
So while the cells are, in a sense, frozen in time, they still have an effect in the body. It's an effect that seems to give them an anti-cancer role as we age.
So you can ask yourself, why would you have two mechanisms to prevent the formation of cancerous lesions or tumors in organisms? Why do we need both cell death and cellular senescence? Why not just have cell death? Because if we get rid of the cancer cells, then we're done with them. Now, here's the advantage that cellular senescence has. And then we also get a little bit into so-called tumor immunology, which is a very hot area at the moment, where we now are armoring our immune system to fight off cancer. Very successful in some cases. But what happens if you imagine you have a tumor, a very small tumor, and it consists, let's say, of 100 cells. And one of these cells becomes stressed and undergoes apoptosis, cell death, then you still have 99 cells left. And so in all these cells, you need to trigger this process of cell death. If that same tumor were to develop a senescent cell, convert the tumor cell into a senescent cell, then the situation might be a little bit more attractive. What senescent cells do is they secrete factors that attract immune cells. So those are inflammatory cytokines and chemokines that they secrete in vast amounts. And for instance, natural killer cells and other types of immune cells that can kill foreign cells, so to say, are attracted to that location where the tumor is positioned. So instead of just killing that senescent cell, they basically clear out all the tumor cells, which are then seen as foreign cells.
It would seem then that these senescent cells play a protective role in our body's battle against cancerous cells, attracting immune cells that can help them suppress tumor growth. So why would we want to use treatments that get rid of them?
Now the problem is, and now you have to kind of make a switch in your thinking, is that we were not supposed to live from a perspective of evolution again beyond about 30 years of age. So in the 1500s, the average life, the median lifespan was about 30. So most people would be dead at that time. Now, in the 1900s, that was extended to about 50. And so now it's close to 8 years, depending a little bit on the country you live in. So what we've done is we basically extended dramatically our lifespan beyond our expiration date, which is basically 30 years of age. And so what our view is, and I think of many others in the field, is that when you're young, you really don't have these cells. Or you have them, but very, very, very small quantities. And so that's kind of the most strong evidence that the accumulation of these cells later in life is not really necessary for you to survive. You don't really need these cells. But they just happen to accumulate simply because we're living past our expiration date. And there's no evolutionary selection that has taken place that prevents that from happening, because simply it didn't have any selective advantage to the species.
And because we are living longer than ever before, or past our expiration date, the potentially detrimental effects of this buildup of senescent cells is starting to become clear across a whole host of age-related disease.
If you look at age-related diseases, my lab has worked on atherosclerosis a lot, but it holds also true for osteoarthritis. What happens when you get these diseases, there is an unusual high concentration of these senescent cells. So for instance, in a clogged artery, in the area where there is the plaque, so-called plaque formation, the plaque has a very high concentration of these senescent cells. So the concentration of factors that they secrete is very, very high. And that is then causing or contributing to the pathologies. For instance, in osteoarthritis, it seems like if you have a lot of these senescent cells in your cartilage, that it accelerates the degeneration of your cartilage and your innate ability to regenerate cartilage is inhibited. So by getting rid of high concentrations of senescent cells, you basically can prevent the degeneration and you can encourage the regenerative potential of the tissue itself.
And the kinds of problems you're talking about these cells causing, are they all produced through exacerbating inflammation? Because you say they attract inflammatory cells and things like that.
Yes. So for instance, it's becoming more and more clear, and I think we need to still put things in context. I think when in 2011, we published a paper in the journal Nature that first made a clear link to the accumulation of these senescent cells and the development of age-related pathologies. Then there was an enormous increase in interest in these cells because there was the potential for therapeutic application. But since then, the core difficulties that the field has had for like 50 years of detecting and characterizing these cells in great detail still have not been solved. So there's a huge interest, but still an enormous need for advancing of knowledge. So what's beginning to emerge is that, for instance, the properties of senescent cells that accumulate in atherogenic plaques that cause myocardial infarction are different than the ones that are accumulating in osteoarthritis or maybe in the most recent study on liver disease. So it seems like depending on the cell type that undergoes senescence, the properties of these secreted factors differ. And it seems like there are always some inflammatory factors involved, but we only starting to scratch the surface of the total amount of these factors. So it's really too early to say much about it.
We may not know exactly how senescent cells have the effects they do or how they differ from organ to organ, but we do know that removing senescent cells, effectively flushing them from the body, is showing promise as a treatment for a whole range of age-related diseases, including fatty liver disease.
And we found in each of these models, using each of these tricks, that when we cured senescent cells, we could very much reduce the liver fat accumulation.
All coming up after this short break. We'll be right back.
Create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade, ever. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code GuardianScience to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Before we kick off again, we wanted to recommend another of our podcasts here at The Guardian. It's called Football Weekly and sees James Richardson and the Football Weekly pod squad bring you a twice-weekly dose of puns and punditry from the Premier League and beyond throughout the 2016-17 season. Football has never sounded this good. To find out more, head over to theguardian.com/podcast or search Football Weekly on your favourite podcast app. Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. Before the break, the Mayo Clinic's Jan van Deursen explained what is known about how and why cellular senescence happens. The science is not completely nailed down, but there is good evidence to show that the buildup of these senescent cells can contribute to age-related diseases, meaning that removing them could lead to exciting new therapies.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, is that Thomas?
Oh, this sounds horrible. Let me try as I...
This is Thomas von Sklenitzky.
Yes, I'm Thomas von Sklenitzky. It's a Polish name, that's why you speak it that way, so von Sklenitzky. I'm professor for cell gerontology at Newcastle University, and I'm scientific director of the Newcastle University Institute for Aging.
Thomas is a senior author on a recent Nature Communications paper entitled Cellular Senescence Drives Age-Dependent Hepatic Steatosis. I spoke to Thomas via Skype this week and started by asking him about the condition they were focusing on.
To be completely honest, in the beginning, it wasn't really so much about liver steatosis, that is fat accumulation in liver. We were looking into age-associated changes in mouse liver in the first place, and we were looking into the impact dietary restriction, that is feeding the mice less than they would normally like to eat, onto the aging of the liver, because it's well known for many, many years that this dietary restriction postpones many of the age-related diseases and, in fact, enables longer lifespan in many animals. So that was our starting point. And then we realized in these experiments that there was a very, very close association between the amount of fat that's accumulated in the liver of those mice when they got as much food as they ever wanted and the amount of liver cells that became senescent. And that got us started to ask the question, maybe the one is responsible for the other. And of course, we wanted to know which is the chicken and which is the egg.
Can you tell me something about how this disease affects people? What sort of problems does it cause?
It's an early form of liver disease, pretty common in metabolic disorders, pretty common in diabetes, and we still don't fully understand the pathogenetic sequences of events, but basically it seems that it is a stepping stone which then might lead to more severe liver complications, that is fibrosis and liver cancer.
So tell us what you did with your mice that had this fatty liver disease.
We used different tricks to kill senescent cells in those mice. And we used different models that induced more fat accumulation in the livers. And we found in each of these models, using each of these tricks, that when we killed senescent cells, we could very much reduce the liver fat accumulation.
One such trick was the use of drugs to flush senescent cells out of the liver. But just how good are these drugs, and what effects did they have?
They don't clear out all the senescent cells, and they probably act better in some tissues than in others. In fact, liver seems to be a rather tricky organ to treat. Some of our colleagues have had very tough times to prove that they see clearance of senescent cells in liver, for instance. And I'm very proud that we've managed that. And yes, there are all sorts of beneficial effects, in fact. And there's now, over the last 1-2 years, there have come out quite a number of papers from a couple of groups that show, yes, if you clear senescent cells in aging, that's all in mice so far, in aging mice, and especially in mice that age faster than normal, then you see a wide range of improvements in things like atherosclerosis, in mice that have been treated with chemotherapy, you see multiple improvements. So improvement of lung function, reduction of pulmonary fibrosis, osteoarthritis. So it's a wide range of different age-associated diseases that can be tackled by treating mice with these senolytic drugs.
It's findings like this that are driving the huge interest in the approach for treating age-related disease. But, as explained by Thomas, there are plenty of barriers to overcome before we see them in the clinic.
The first barrier, of course, is the proof of principle experiments in mice have been done in genetically modified mice, so that you know about the specificity of the senescent cell removal. That, of course, cannot be translated. So there is now a lot of effort to find drugs that do the same trick. So the pioneer of that is someone else from Mayo Clinic, Jim Kirkland. And those drugs have, in our hands, very good efficiency, but of course they have, as all drugs, they do have side effects. In essence, many of them are actually like tumor therapeutics.
And these are anti-cancer drugs, essentially. They are targeting...
Yeah, they are apoptosis-inducing drugs. And some of them have been in use in different concentrations as cancer therapeutics. Another issue here is, and that comes back onto this role of mitochondrial dysfunction in senescence. Another issue here is that, in fact, drugs that impact on mitochondria and on the turnover of mitochondria seem to be another type of candidates. And those drugs are things like metformin, for instance, which in long-term use as a diabetes drug, and those might actually have first a better ratio of potency and side effects, lower side effects, and also by targeting these metabolic side of senescent cells, we actually think that they might have even more potential. Those drugs, so there is a clinical trial starting in the US now with metformin in aged people.
I'm wondering if there are issues around targeting, and that is, how do you get your drug to take out the senescent cells in the organ that you're particularly interested in, and not senescent cells everywhere around the body where they may be having some beneficial effects as well?
Yes, there are issues around that, of course. If I think about applications in people, I think about old people. So we know that there is a functional role for cell senescence during embryonic development, so I'm not so worried about that. But we also know that there's a functional role for senescent cells in wound healing, for instance. That, of course, might be worrying. We do think that can be targeted by well-timed application regimens. At least for purely senolytic drugs, you would expect that a relatively short treatment would reduce senescent cell frequencies. And then, as we know that senescent cells produce senescence in their surrounding cells, in bystander cells, that means basically once you reduce them, you also reduce the rate at which they occur. So you help the body to keep them low, even if you don't treat actively. So there are ways in getting around that. The other thing, of course, is also, if you think about old people, the problem in old people is not that they have either, let's say, diabetes or cardiovascular disease or tumor. The problem is that they have all of that. So you want something that targets multimorbidity. And that's an approach where we are only very, very much in the beginning. But I think that's becoming more and more important. The point really, I think, for us is, can we treat multimorbidity, frailty, all these increasing disability with aging all together? And that's where I think there is a significant hope for senolytic or senostatic treatments.
Can you just explain what those two words mean, those senolytic and senostatic?
Yes. So senolytic means kill senescent cells. Ideally, a single application of a drug will kill the cell. That's senolytic. Senostatic means you don't kill the senescent cell, but you suppress the phenotype. You suppress the signals these cells send out that then ultimately make other cells in the environment senescent. So, as I said, metformin or rapamycin would be types of a senostatic drug that doesn't make the cells go away, but that blocks the signals they send out.
So, whether it's done with senolytic or senostatic drugs, targeting senescent cells in the body could one day become a radical new treatment for a whole host of diseases that take hold in old age. It's just what we need with an aging population, but as Jan explains, it's not just treatments for disease that will push this kind of research.
You're probably going to see two lines of therapy. One is people really want to live longer. And if compound X, Y, or Z, mostly those are dietary supplements, if you take them, you'll live longer and healthier. Right? That's one way. Now what you'll see is probably that there's going to be claims that these dietary supplements slow down the accumulation of senescent cells. So that's, I think, one track. The other track is more like drugs that have scientifically been proven to selectively kill senescent cells that in a controlled fashion can be used to treat age-related conditions, such as maybe osteoarthritis, glaucoma, or macular degeneration, or osteoarthritis. And those are the real drugs that need to be approved by the government, in this case, the FDA. That's a longer process, and so that will take a while. But for instance, the company that I've been involved in plans to do some clinical trials with the best drugs early next year. Now, then it depends on how these trials are going to play out. But the expectation is that the research is so promising that sooner or later there will be one or more applications available that kill senescent cells in a controlled fashion, so let's say in a particular disease context.
Special thanks this week to Jan van Dersen and Thomas von Skolinitsky. We'll include a link to Thomas's paper and to a great review of cellular senescence by Jan on the episodes page on the Guardian website. I'm Ian Sample. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.